This episode of Arc Junkies is sponsored by WeldDevils.com. For welder-inspired merch like t-shirts, hats, and coffee mugs, WeldDevils.com is your one-stop shop. WeldDevils.com, we are devils. From Podcast Detroit Studios in Royal Oak, Michigan, this is Arc Junkies. What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode 21 of Arc Junkies. I am your host, Jimmy McKnight, and I am absolutely ecstatic to welcome this week's guest. I'd like to welcome to the show Mr. Alec Steele. How you doing, Alec?
Woo! Thank you so much, Jimmy, for the wonderful intro. I'm doing great. Thanks. How about yourself?
I'm doing absolutely fantastic. You know, I think nowadays with the influx of people's interest in metalwork, as such as blacksmithing like you do and shows like Forge and Fire, I think the interest in metalwork and blacksmithing is literally at an all-time high. And I'm wondering, you know, I know your backstory, but for those who may not be so familiar with you, where did this all kind of start for you?
This all started on a rainy summer's day, way back July 19th, 2009, which for a lot of you guys is not such a long time ago, but for me, I was 11 years old, and I went to a game and country fair. And I saw some blacksmiths, little 4 foot 10 me, saw some blacksmiths making a leaf. And I stood behind the rope cordon there with my jaw completely dropped as I watched this guy hammering on an anvil and turning out this incredible leaf. And I guess he saw how captivated I was because he gave me the leaf.
Oh, nice.
I know the guy today. Like, you know, he's a local blacksmith. We're friends. It's great. And he gave me the leaf. And, like, I was just so shocked that you could freaking take fire, hit it with a hammer, and make stuff with it, which is great. And as any red-blooded 11-year-old boy, you know, any red-blooded 11-year-old boy's desires are basically to just heat things up with fire and hit them with a hammer. So it worked really, really well with that. And I got into it as a hobby. And it was something that, you know, obsessed every single thought that I have, that I had, you know, any weekend I would, any time I possibly could, I was beating on metal and trying to get better at it. And, you know, any time I could, I was reading books about it. And it was, you know, it was a massive, massive captivation of mine there at the time. And when I was, so I kind of like thinking about, you know, self-teaching myself, looking at every single blacksmithing video I could on the internet, looking at every single tutorial I could find. And I eventually found a guy by the name of Brian Brazil, whose techniques I really liked his approach to blacksmithing. It was very methodical, and I liked that. It was, you know, it was thinking about an individual blow and its effect on the steel, and then, you know, trying to work from like a technique point of view, you know, really, really fine detail of technique with the actual hammer and metal with a 5-pound hammer. And so I was fortunate enough that, you know, I was able to go and take a class with him in Mississippi at the age of 13, which was just such a fantastic experience to go from, you know, here in, you know, Norfolk in the United Kingdom to Mississippi and go and learn with this guy for 12 days. And it was great. And from there, you know, he kind of really became a mentor in the craft. And whenever I had the opportunity to, I'd fly out there, and he was gracious enough to really teach me a hell of a lot about it. And I was able to make friends that were also blacksmiths that would, you know, teach me things and stuff like that. So it's really, you know, my story is a story of, you know, in terms of getting into it to the point where it was a business, is like, you know, doing a hell of a lot of practice and then people just being extraordinarily generous with their sharing of instruction to me there as I was a teenager. You know, fast forward a little bit, at age 16, a little fed up with kind of sitting in school, you know, not really doing much, not producing anything, you know, feeling a little more like a funnel than an actual producer and creative person making stuff. You know, I had enough, and I decided to leave school age 16 to start my business in blacksmithing. And, you know, interestingly enough, that was to a certain extent a little bit of like a rejection of normal, you know, civic polite society. I want to just, you know, go into the woods and be a blacksmith, you know, kind of thing. And I never really thought that I'd ever build a business out of it that was going to produce, you know, any sort of revenue whatsoever. I didn't really ever have that mentality. And so from there, being a blacksmith as my business, you know, struggling to make things work there as soon as I left school, I slowly kind of learned and discovered and kind of worked out, well, actually, hang on a second, maybe money is important. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's going to be important to be able to have some sort of financial security in the future, you know, so that I can have a family and support them, you know, as those became big goals of mine for the future. And so I then kind of looked into how it is I could grow my business, where were my strong points, and eventually started making YouTube videos most days. And in a year and a half here, I've taken the YouTube channel. It's just a complete blessing to be able to work hard and have this happen. I've been able to take the YouTube channel from kind of 7,000 subscribers all the way up to bloody, you know, 630,000 or something people that want to somehow see me and my goofy antics, you know, beat the crap out of stuff with a hammer and break end mills and basically just have a whole load of fun. So it's been a hell of a lot of hard work. And I can certainly say that that's a big part of the reason that I'm fortunate enough to be here. But it's just a whole lot of fun, fun journey.
Well, you're definitely living the dream as far as content producers go. You've actually, you're very successful at it, and you've turned it into what you do every single day and how you support yourself. I do want to pull back a little bit to, though, where you said you left school at 16 years of age. That's a massive decision to make at that young of an age. I can imagine that the people that were in your life at that point, you know, might have been a little reluctant to support you with that. So how did you, Alex Steele, stay focused that this was what you were going to do and you were going to make it happen no matter what?
That's a funny question, actually. And I think the type of person I am, I mean, the type of person it takes to, you know, to do this kind of stuff, be it the actual like craftsmanship side of things and be it the actual kind of like business side of things, it takes being really, really stubborn. You know, it takes being stubborn enough to tell a piece of steel that it's going to become what you want. And I actually never really kind of thought about, oh, I is this something I want to do or not? I mean, it was like, there was just no question in my mind that I wanted to leave school. And there was no question in my mind that I wanted to be a blacksmith. And there never really was any question. And as soon as I started doing it, the question was, it's just like, you know, how can I make this as good for myself as possible? It was never like, oh, you know, this, so many people are telling me this is a terrible idea and I have no cushion and I have no safety net. And, oh, this is going to be so bad. Employers, they want to see your qualifications. And maybe you should even go to university once you've finished school. Oh, watch out. You know, it's the end of the world if you leave school and don't have qualifications. It never really bothered me. I just wanted the conversations to get over and done with so I could start making and doing what I wanted to do.
Very cool. I can relate to that because I'm a welder. I've been a welder for 15 years and I was exposed to it right out of high school. And I absolutely, you know, just like you with blacksmithing, I became 100% obsessed with it. I did it as much as possible. I found friends that did it that had their own welders at home. And I went over there after work and welded even more. So, I mean, I understand that once you find what it is that you want to do, it really doesn't matter anything else. You're going to make it work 100%.
Absolutely. And you know, that's so true. You know, you put the work in and generally it works out. You know, that seems to be a pretty good little indicator for any sort of degree of success or anything. Is like, you know, it's the people that actually get stuck in and make it happen,
right?
You know, through the bit of the teeth, you know, kind of thing.
So where did it all kind of come to fruition that you were like, I'm going to turn this into a YouTube channel? I think people would be interested in what I do every single day.
So what it was is, at the time, I'd worked out that my best market, the best people that I could serve with my skills, the people I could provide value to, were hobbyist blacksmiths, because they were the people that liking my Instagram posts. They were the people that saw what it is that I did and the people that I could reach. Before, in business, I was trying to like do architectural ironwork, you know, sell to folks that wanted nice gates and what have you. Funny thing is, I had no idea how to make a nice gate. So, you know, like that was difficult too, but you know, it was just all around a difficult thing to do. And I had no clue what it was that I was doing, but I played on the strengths of, well, actually, there are a few people that already like seeing what it is that I do in, you know, Instagram posts and Facebook posts and YouTube videos. I'd occasionally make the occasional YouTube video, say, rewinding back to, you know, being a teenager and then, you know, up to having left school and what have you and starting the business. Yeah, I'd occasionally post a YouTube video. As I said, eventually built up to about kind of 7,000 subscribers or so with, you know, without me knowing. I had like 50 videos that were all, you know, pretty terrible and whatever, you know, it was very, I'm so pleased that I felt like I should have posted YouTube videos, because it would have been a hell of a lot more difficult to get in that year and a half to where I am now. But I thought, okay, so it's the hobbyist blacksmiths that I will be able to best serve. So I started teaching classes to hobbyist blacksmiths. I did that for a while, doing private classes and eventually running into doing kind of group classes and what have you. And then I realized, I guess they also like my tools. So at the same time, I was making and selling tools for blacksmiths, specifically my hammers, which, you know, is a nice kind of hand forge product that's, you know, ready to use straight out of the bat and has all the wonderful aspects of being handmade, in the sense that, you know, it looks beautiful and it's got a piece of the craftsman in it and that kind of stuff. And people really, you know, liked my hammers, and occasionally I'd sell hammers. But, you know, I also built myself an online school that I could drive people to, you know, teach them how to get into blacksmithing as a hobby. But I was, you know, thinking to myself, well, gee whiz, I'm not really, you know, moving too much stuff here. I want to expand my business. I want to be able to, you know, do more and bring in more revenue and kind of serve more people. Well, lo and behold, I stumble across, like, this is what kind of inspired me to really, really get into making the videos so frequently. I stumble across Casey Neistat's channel, which is obviously like a vlog channel, right? You know, he showed what it is that he did each day in a cinematic way. I've always been interested in photography a little bit, and, you know, I always liked and appreciated good shots. And I thought, holy moly, this guy has done something pretty phenomenal. He's started posting every day. I always would have guessed that people would get sick with seeing your stuff every day. Clearly not for him. That guy's taking in like 120K a month in ad revenue. Oh, I want me some of that. Like a little slice of that would be quite nice. And I thought, well, why didn't I give it a go? Like, I've got some thousand subscribers. So I started making videos. I started doing kind of 7-6 videos a week there for a good long while, and did a year's work of pretty consistent 120 hour weeks working myself into the grindstone there, to work in the workshop while filming what it was that I was doing, and then edit the thing and throw it on YouTube, doing it all myself, which was a hell of a lot of hard work, but a lot of fun. And the great thing was, is it got to the point where, great, I could sell tools. Perfect. Like, anytime I'd like open up pre-orders for hammers, they'd go, which was super exciting. But obviously a lot of hard work to then fulfill all those orders and get them out of the shop. And it was great. I can sell classes. Anytime I'd put classes up, boom, they'd go. They'd sell. Nice. Fantastic. Brill. That still takes time. And I can't produce the content that I want to produce. And eventually I want to get to the point where all I'm doing is producing content, because that's infinitely scalable. I've only got so many hours in the day to make hammers. However, I can put the same amount of effort into making a 10-minute video I can put the same amount of effort into taking a 10-minute video into making a 10-minute video that will get watched 1,000 times as I will that a 10-minute video that'll get watched a million times. Mm-hmm. There are intricacies of that are not yet examined. The video that you get a million views on probably takes a little bit more thought to make, but you get what I'm saying.
Oh yeah.
It's a hell of a lot more scalable to work on, you know, say getting advertising for what it is that you're advertising revenue for what it is that you're creating, or having kind of, you know, semi-passive streams that can come from your presence. And I eventually wanted to get to that point. And right about March of last year there, March of 2017, I had just this incredible week on YouTube where I just made this blitz. I am so sorry for these notifications in the background.
No worries. No worries.
Following our podcast, I had this fantastic blitz of brilliant videos that I created that were all timed so well. And it was just fantastic because it helped that YouTube channel get a really good pop. And it started getting a lot of people more interested. I did a collaboration with the Samurai Carpenter. I made him a Damascus chisel. Boom, that gave me another pop. And then all of a sudden that YouTube channel went from, you know, just about 50,000 subscribers to something ridiculous, like 170,000 subscribers in a month.
Wow.
And it like immediately took the YouTube channel's ad revenue to the point where I'm like, okay, that's a really important little pocket of money there. This absolutely is viable as my sole and only focus. I'm not going to sell any more classes. I'm not going to sell any more tools. I'm just going to focus on trying to get people excited to see what it is that I do in the workshop each day. And so that month there was a big turning point, to the point that, you know, now I've got a full-time videographer that will edit what it is that I film each day. And then when he's done editing, he'll then film a little bit too, which is just, you know, really, really super duper exciting to now just be in the business of entertaining people and, you know, providing people value. And then obviously then that's kind of marketable for my own few things that I sell, as well as kind of advertisers that want to work with me and promote their own products, which is just super, super duper exciting.
How you said, you know, when you started this, you were worried about, you know, people getting bored watching these videos. The thing I think is really intriguing about your videos is it plays like a story. I mean, it really is a journey. We've watched you go from your old shop to your new shop and you show your failures, which I think is the most human thing about your videos. You know, you don't know everything and you show that you don't know everything. I think that's such a relatable trait to what you're putting out there. Which leads me to my next question. When you're choosing a project to build, I mean, do you choose it or does it choose you?
Oh, very, very, ooh, that's deep, man. Just messing with you. Well, first of all, just talking about like the failures thing, I'm not smart enough to realize how important it is for the failures to be in the videos. It wasn't a conscious decision of like, oh, wow, I'm going to be like super honest and upfront with, you know, the things that I don't know. It was like, no, what it was is, okay, I need to make videos. I am not at all good enough to be able to not fail at stuff. I want a video to go out. It sure as hell has got to include the failures. Otherwise, there'd be half as many videos because, like, that's the reality. I just don't know enough. A lot of people complain, oh, why didn't you do more informational videos? Well, I ran out of stuff to teach at, like, video number 10.
Right.
You know, I'm humbled by the craft and the intricacies of making stuff. I have no clue how to do 95% of the stuff it is that I do. I just have to stumble my way through. And so naturally, the failures are there. And if I want to make a video, they end up in the video. And I'm really like just so thankful that it turned out. But people like to see the failures on the whole. So and I'm thrilled about that because I don't have any problem with people knowing that I mess stuff up because I do. And so I'm very pleased that I can mess stuff up and still provide entertainment to people, which is great, which is fantastic. Aside from that, in terms of choosing projects, it's a combination of things. If a lot of people are asking about seeing a project, that gives me a little bit of an inkling that it's a project that people are going to like. It's also a case of kind of seeing what are the type of videos that people are watching. I noticed a while ago people like watching knives, and whenever I made knife videos, they did well. People like the sharp and pointy. That's fine. I love the sharp and pointy too. Sharp pointy things are absolutely fantastic. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, okay, have a lot of people ask for them? Is this going to get views? And then am I going to enjoy this, which is also important? Is this going to be like an interesting thing for me to learn? For example, right now I'm working on a frame lock folding knife, and there are projects that I could do that would get more views, but I just want to work on a frame lock folding knife because I really, really want to like learn this process and get good and like learn about machining and get better at this stuff and refine my skills and practice and see where the stuff I need to learn is and see where the stuff that I can do is and just kind of do it because it's enjoyable. You know, there are projects that will come up here in the future that I have planned to do. I'm planning to take apart my power hammer and like try and completely redo it, which is going to be really either like a really terrible thing or a great thing. I might destroy the power hammer, or I'm going to learn a lot and I'm going to be able to bring people through the process, but it's not going to get a lot of views, which is like sad. But then again, I don't do this to slog away and make things that I don't want to make. So it's always a toss up for me. Okay, do I want to, you know, maybe make a little bit more money and do a project that's not quite as enjoyable, or do I want to, you know, do a project that like is really going to get me thrilled? You know, at the end of the day, I'd like to think that, you know, the people that are really, you know, the hardcore the people that really appreciate what it is that I do, I think they want to kind of see whatever it is that I tackle, so long as it's, you know, pushing what it is that I know and what have you, and has its fair bit of humor and failure in it. But yeah, you know, sometimes it's a video to try and get people interested in what it is that I do, and sometimes I just wanna make a folding knife. So there we go.
Well, how you mentioned, you know, you're also doing machining. That is another element that you are bringing into your videos. It's not just hammering away at steel. You're also machining. You're also welding, which is really, you know, the basis of what this show is about. So I do want to kind of pick your brain on your welding experience a little bit.
Yeah.
Where did you teach yourself welding? Did you just kind of watch some videos and go for it? Or did you have an instructor? How did your path to finding the arc start?
So I think I was 13 years old, and I wanted to get into welding, and I'm pretty sure I stumbled with my mother into a welding shop, a welding supplier, and there was a used – anybody in the UK will know these welders, because like everybody's seen them and used them, and everybody has replaced the little 13-amp fuse in the plug like 100 times. Use it off a household surface, household ring mail or whatever. But it's an oil cooled welder. Like these things, like 50 or 60 years old. It's 110 amp stick welder, oil cooled, beast of a thing. It came on a stand. And like thinking back now, I'm sure the guy must have given me an incredible deal, because like he just liked seeing this young kid that was interested. I'm pretty sure I bought the thing for £80, like $110. Mm-hmm. No, it had been redone, new oil in it, you know, and had like new leads and stuff like that. Hell yeah, this guy was losing money on this. What a nice guy. I wish I remember where the place was. I want to go in and thank the guy, because he must have lost money on that. And so I got that stick welder, and I think I had one or two little welding lessons. A guy that at the steel yard that I go to said he'd give me some welding lessons. So he came up and kind of taught me how to run some extraordinarily basic beads with the stick welder there. And we did one or two of those. And then I kind of just stumbled my way through on whatever project I needed to do. If it needed stick welding, well, then I guess I better stick weld it with every amp of power that little thing had, stacking up 3/32 electrode, you know, 4 high to try and get a big enough weld. but like it was only as like a necessity. I would only weld if a project necessitated it, like I'm making an anvil stand or fabricating, you know, up a steel rack or something like that. It was never. Welding was never my hobby, so to speak. It was always the blacksmithing, and welding would kind of support that. Right now, for example, like I could not at all call myself a welder. I can run some MIG bead okay. I can, if I picked up a stick welder, I'd probably do okay with a TIG welder. Like I'm an absolute amateur, but I just enjoy that a lot. I love TIG welding. That's a really, really fun process. And so I use it as projects require it. And sadly, my skills in it are seriously, seriously lacking. And I hope to work on that someday for sure.
Well, I think what you're saying is that, you know, it is very much relative how you said welding sort of necessitated your blacksmithing. For me personally, you know, I've been a welder. That's all I've really done. I've done a little bit of metalwork, but I've made it a New Year's resolution to really get into blacksmithing and more specified a bladesmithing. Because as you brought up earlier, you know, the sharp and pointy. Everybody likes the sharp and pointy. There is just something so captivative to me about taking a raw piece of steel and forming it to your will and making something beautiful out of it. I think that really speaks to people that are metal workers. And I think there's honestly something, I don't want to get too zen about it, but there's almost like a spiritual thing to it, where it's like, look, there is a piece of me in this. I turned this from a raw ingot into something that's absolutely beautiful.
I can totally resonate with what it is you're saying. I often think of it as this way. It's like, you know, all through humanity, all through time, we're constantly trying to like conquer things and master things and do better than our forefathers and do better than our brothers and do better than the person in the village next door. We're constantly trying to do better and conquer things and master things. And it's like, I'm constantly shocked, and one of the things I love about what it is that I do, getting to play with metal, is I get to like fight the toughest material on earth. You know, I get to you know, form it into my desires in my brain. And sometimes metal wins, and I don't win. But like when you win, you're conquering stuff that is so unbelievably complex to imagine A can exist. Like the thought that we can go to a like steel shop and get that bar of steel for like, you know, really steel costs like nothing.
Yeah.
Like in the grand scheme of things, to think that somebody had to go and dig it up with a digger, had to put it through all sorts of scientific processes to freaking turn it into steel and then roll it down a mill, cut it up, ship it off, you know, it gets on 10 trucks to end up at your steel supplier. You go pick it up. The thing costs a couple bucks, you know, something so complex as that, to then be able to take the thing and, you know, take a square piece of steel that you can't bend with your hand, you can't bite into, you can't do anything to, but you can damn sure swing a hammer at and eventually form it at a high enough temperature into your heart and mind's desires. Like, that's crazy. It's absolutely unbelievable. And being able to tame these materials is fantastic. And I think it's a big part of being human, because that's all we did. You know, we tamed fire and we're able to cook and we get smarter, you know, and then we tame, bronze. We're able to make a certain degree of a halfway decent weapon. We tame steel. All of a sudden we're able to conquer our enemies with the push of a sword. You know, it's absolutely unbelievable. And it's why I have like totally mad respect for any sort of kind of creative people, any sort of like, you know, people that are making things. It's why, you know, okay, obviously I'm trying to learn machining right now, but even before then, like, you know, the people that are working in fields that are kind of parallel to this, people that are making stuff, be them a software engineer, a blacksmith, a woodworker, a welder, or whatever. These are people that are taming the complex and taming the hardest things on earth and, you know, making them serve us. It's absolutely an incredible thing. And it's really human. I love it. Yes. Love it.
You know, even with guys like you and shows like Forge and Fire and other makers that are on YouTube, you know, bringing metalwork and blacksmithing and bladesmithing kind of more into the mainstream. And, you know, like we said at the beginning of the show, more people seem interested in it than ever. It's still, you know, very subculture. It's not, you can't just go to your local community college or university and learn blacksmithing. You almost have to seek out an actual blacksmith to learn from. So for the aspiring blacksmith who could be listening to this right now, what sort of advice would you have for them to find a teacher or find their way into the art of blacksmithing?
Firstly, something that I really amaze myself with every day is my inability to Google like questions that I have. I mean, I'm shocked. I mean, Google paid me, for goodness sake. I should really think about it a little bit more, but Google and, you know, a search term like learn blacksmithing insert location. Mm-hmm. If your location is too precise, use a wider location and then a wider location. Google's going to be an incredible help to you. Aside from that, if you're in the US, I presume most of your viewers are, there's an organization called ABANA, and they have ABANA, Artist Blacksmithing Association of North America. This isn't bladesmithing. This is more about blacksmithing. I haven't kind of really been deep enough in the bladesmithing community too much to really know the best places for that, other than like look on Google. But certainly for learning blacksmithing, there are chapters in, I think, almost every state in the US, and they usually have monthly meetings and they'll let folks have a go. And simply kind of getting out to one of those meetings, one of those, local ABANA meetings, local chapter meetings, there is a great way to, you know, start networking and, you know, asking people if they'll kind of let you come learn from them, or finding out where folks are teaching classes. But yeah, for certainly use Google and go take a blacksmithing class if you can. You know, if there's a place that's close enough, I would highly, highly recommend it. And if it's a hobby that you want to get into, you know, for sake of whatever money it is you're going to pay on the blacksmithing class, not only are you going to be able to make whatever it is that the class is advertised as making, but you're going to be able to pick the brains of the instructor, the guy that's there teaching at the blacksmith school. You're going to be able to, you know, maybe even get on his friendly side, and, you know, he'll be willing to give you a lot of information, and could be a good point of contact for any questions that you have in the future. But for sure, getting instruction is just like a really, really good way to help kind of, you know, speed and fast track your entry into the craft. Certainly plenty of people in the country teaching knife making as well as blacksmithing. So I'd seek out some instruction. And aside from that, in terms of what it is that's required to make stuff in your backyard, if you're wanting to get into making knives, it's a belt grinder that's key. Like, you know, you can do it with files, absolutely, but a belt grinder is really helpful. There are plans for building them, but you can also buy them, and you know, it's whatever works best for you. And aside from that, you know, if you want to get into blacksmithing, forge and an anvil. An anvil doesn't have to be a really expensive thing. An anvil literally just has to be a steel block that has slightly dressed edges and is flat on the top and is able to support the load of you hammering. You know, it needs to be a solid block. You know, it can't be like a piece of box section or a piece of, you know, I-beam. But, you know, like almost all of the stuff that you see me do in my videos, I could take a 5-inch round diameter piece of mild steel round bar that was 8 inches tall. I could route a hole in a block of wood, silicone or epoxy the thing into the block of wood, you know, radius some edges, and like I'd be good to go. I'd be able to do almost everything that it is that I do when I'm not using the power hammer, obviously. But, you know, or like general blade forging you can do on a freaking block of steel that your steel supplier's got as an offcut, for goodness sake. You just want a good mass and you want to be able to secure it down tight. In terms of a forge, you're basically looking for heat. Sorry, I can't speak Fahrenheit.
That's all right.
You're looking for heat in excess of 1200 degrees Celsius. You know, you want to get a thing that's going to heat to 1400 degrees Celsius. There are plenty of ways to do that. You can do that with charcoal. You can do it with coke. You can do it with coal. You can also do it with propane. You can do it with oil-fired furnaces. You know, I'm a big fan of the propane forges, and I use a Venturi. So it's like you shoot in propane at a high pressure that sucks in atmospheric air, you know, and I sell those kits to people that want to build their own forges. And that's one way of going about it, using a propane forge like that. But, you know, there's so much stuff on the internet about how to build forges, and they're really not that expensive to buy, especially when you consider what is your time worth when you're building the thing and you mess up and you've got to start again. So I'm in a lucky position that, you know, for me, it's a business, and me buying tools is a little bit of an easier proposition than somebody that's a hobbyist. But I when I can recommend it, you know, like stuff like a forge, a belt grinder, you know, you might as well just buy it, get it over and done with, you know, pull the Band-Aid off, get it done, and then focus on what is really important, which is learning the craft itself. You know, it's very important to learn the craft, and you can't learn the craft if you're trying to make the stuff to learn the craft. Now, this is it's a different story when it comes to forging your own tools, because you can forge your own tools, and you absolutely should, to get good at what it is that you do, making chisels and punches and eventually kind of hammers and all the other tools that are associated in the craft is an incredible way to build skill. Highly recommend it. But in terms of like the general stuff, like a forge and an anvil, you know, if you want to learn the craft of blacksmithing, just learn the craft of blacksmithing, get a forge, you know, get it over and done with.
There you go. I think that's a better place than any to put a fork in it for this one, man. Thank you again for making the time to come on the show, and you know, thank you for what you're doing and letting this art not get lost by constantly putting out great content and letting people know more about the art of blacksmithing. Before I let you go, please plug your social media and your YouTube channel where people can find you and get entertained every single day by the videos you put out.
Oh, well, thank you so much. It's a real big honor that I do not take lightly, that I get to share my experience here in the shop, and I get to share my joy of making with so many people. And I'm just thrilled to have been on here. Thank you for inviting me. It's been a total blast. If anybody wants to see what it is that I'm up to, you can just type in Alec Steele, and that's A-L-E-C, and it's Steele, like the metal, but with an E on the end. Do you get the iron E? Ha 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 ha. Joke number 1356. Told it a lot of times. And that is my legal name. That has not been changed. So it's
works perfect, man. That's perfect.
Awesome. Hey, thanks, man. It's been a total blast.
Anytime, man. Thank you again. I hope to have you back on sometime soon. Thanks again.
Absolutely. Would love to.
Oakley Dokley, everybody. Thank you so very much for listening. I really hope you enjoyed the episode with Alec Steele. I hope you feel inspired and ready to go out and make your own thing. As always, if you are an iTunes listener, please remember to hit subscribe and leave a review, because your reviews help this podcast get further up on the rankings and ultimately reach more people. This podcast is available everywhere that podcasts are downloaded, including iHeartRadio and Stitcher. Thank you so very much for listening. Until next time, work safe and weld hard.